Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And with the collapse of the former superpower,
several powerful factions now vie for control.
The threat is real. An evil organization calling itself SCAR.
Known only as SCAR.
Their goal,
nothing short of total world domination.
Led by this man,
known only as Iron Claw.
We will be victorious!
Not on my watch!
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. Can you believe it? Here we are in our season six, talking more G.I. Joe Extreme, back-to-back G.I. Joe Extreme weeks, so you know that I was in charge of booking. This is Knowing Is Half the Podcast, and I am Ray Stakanis.
Okay, I'm Robert Clark Chan.
I'm Gina Ippolito. I can't wait to hear what Chan's going to say.
Who, if we go back into the chat, said, so I guess we're doing G.I. Joe this week, and I was the one that prompted you to get your shit together?
I thought I was the one who said, why don't we just do G.I. Joe?
Yeah, that is correct. TV's Gina Ippolito actually is the one who said it first in chat.
Oh, my God.
That was
God.
Right along the lines of what I was thinking, because I'm always telling us we should do G.I. Joe.
So. You guys, it's like... if a vagina is involved, you have no idea who said it first.
I'm just saying I influenced it. I'm not saying I said it. That's the true greatness of the producer.
We're just doing the next episode of G.I. Joe, right? Monday, 1:05 p.m. Gina, we got a link for tonight, 9:38 a.m. Tuesday.
You're talking about today.
Yeah, I said it
yesterday. I said last week, why don't we just do G.I. Joe? I said that last week.
Last week?
Yeah, when we did last week's episode, I said I was the one who got us back on track for G.I. Joe because Ray kept sort of dicking around and saying, well, we'll get back to it eventually and blah, 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 blah.
Like Ray just does not want to do episodes of G.I. Joe.
What is happening? All I look through the chat here is just Gina going off, you know, paragraph after paragraph about Kanye West. That's all I'm getting out of this chat right now.
It's really weird how she just turned and was just like, I think that women should be stalked. That's a very normal and natural thing.
It was shocking. It was a shocking development for TV's Gina Ippolito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a lot of hot takes. And I'm not afraid to share them.
Well,
literally, there's the other Matt Walsh, not the funny, cool UCB Matt Walsh, the other conservative Matt Walsh.
Yeah,
terrible. About
how like, yeah, I'm on Kanye's side. He should be a jealous freak out dude, like stalking women. I'm like, wow, that is it's a bold choice in this day and age.
Crazy how like the certain number of these commentators online who are all trash, obviously, but they just look at a situation, they see which side is clearly and obviously wrong, and then they automatically glom onto that side 200%. And I will never understand how that works.
I can tell you it's a short form improv game because I did comedy sports long enough to know that what you do is you play yourself a game of world's worst and then just go read the paper and take anything and just go like, hey, what's the worst possible take there? Boom. You tweet that out and you get points for it.
Yeah.
Who gives you those points? God? Does God give you those points?
No, there's a referee in the show. You got two teams on either side, you know, a red team and a blue team with wacky names and there's a ref who hands out points.
Weirdly
it's kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway, but sporty.
Weirdly enough, it's Elon Musk who actually gives you the points. So that's okay. How it works.
Ooh, points for going to Mars?
Yeah, that's right. You get Mars points.
Are there points on Mars?
No, I mean, to be fair, though, you are getting all these points on Mars because the idea is to send you there and never deal with you again. So,
I mean,
be careful.
I've been expecting. I knew that as soon as that technology arrived, I would be one of the first on the, like, get him off the goddamn planet.
Well, it really blows
me
away.
We've
having
all seen in our quest to watch every single one of our screeners this year for the first time before the Academy Awards, Don't Look Up. So we know how this ends.
Yeah,
oh, I've never seen that. I assume it ends with somebody looking up.
I don't want to spoil it now.
Okay, you know what? That's a good call. That's a good call. In a world where the BioShock video game exists, it is wild for me to see these people that being like, we're very, very rich and we just want to live with other very, very rich people in a place you can't get to us. Because as we all know from BioShock, it ended so well for that group of people.
I mean, I'm very, very smart and I only want to interact with and live with other very, very smart people, which is why I've been trying to get out of this podcast for 6 years.
What are you doing here?
You got to try harder.
I chose the path of least resistance.
I mean, I feel like we're just taking a page from Kanye's book, like we always have, Ray and I.
Sure.
And, you know, if a woman doesn't want something, we just keep on harassing them until they finally cave. That's how it works, right?
It wasn't appropriate when Gina was actually not, you know, not here for recording time. And I texted Gina and I said, where are you at? And she texted me back. I'm in bed with your wife. Very inappropriate, Gina. Very inappropriate.
It's a flex. It's a flex that I will bust out anytime I am actually in bed with your wife.
It happens more often than you'd think. I'll start there.
I will say I don't understand why you bought a ferry. It didn't track with the rest of the things you've been doing.
I just have too much money and I don't know what to do with it. And I've already gotten as many tattoos as my nutsack and underboob can handle. So.
Fair.
Underboob tattoo a thing?
You know what? If it's not, it should be. Because when you're standing on top of a mirror, you'll be able to look down and see. I'm assuming it's two eyeballs that anyone would get on their underboob. Or something that you can only read if you're standing on top of a mirror and it's printed on your underboob backwards.
I want to see that Kilroy was here guy. That's what I want to see. But back
this is the kind of classy repartee that people naturally come to expect from knowing is half the podcast.
Hey, did
I hope
you know
this is your first episode and like you're already gone.
No, if this was your first episode, you know exactly what you're in for. But mixed in with some G.I. Joe talk. That's all.
I mean, all I care about is that I kept to a strict intro. I said my name. Anything after that is just gravy.
It's, you know, you got to say your name, the name of the show, and what your show's about. And we do all those things at the top every episode, despite the fact that Robert Clark Chan hates it.
This is a sacrifice that I'm making for all of you. And here's me gesturing at humanity.
So the episode of G.I. Joe Extreme we're going to talk about is episode 2.
I'm not done gesturing.
Season 2.
There's a lot of people. I'm casting my arms wide. And I'm going slow, so I make sure I get everybody, because people often just wave their arms and like, what about the people in Antarctica? There are people there in research stations. I want to encompass them as well. I'm very inclusive.
Famed visual medium podcasting.
I think the fans can hear it. They can hear that I'm doing that.
If they can't
hear
it, they can feel it. I promise you that now.
You'll feel when I'm sweeping over you. You'll feel like a warm glow in your belly.
Oh, I was thinking it's like the opposite of ASMR. When people want the opposite of like a nice, relaxing, shiver-inducing ASMR experience, they tune into this.
Is it like nails on a chalkboard?
They're just tense for weeks.
Oh my!
The important thing is we provide a service.
Yeah,
not a good service, but it is a service.
It's a niche service. Some people are too relaxed.
We are an ASMR companion piece that you listen to first before you get relaxed. You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, you got to amp yourself up first. Otherwise, right. the ASMR isn't really working hard enough.
That's why you like dip into like the hot tub before you go into the cold water. Mm-hmm. Or is it cold water in the hot tub?
No, I think like in Wii Spa, there's the cold room. So you can go to one of the hot rooms and get all relaxed. And then you're like, but I want to go to another hot room, but I'm already super relaxed. So you go into the ice room for like 3 minutes and then you're like, fuck, I'm cold.
Thank you for that insight into the Wii Spa world that I will never, ever be a part of.
They let you bring kids there and there's some word for like a jungle gym.
Can we leave them there?
Yeah, you can leave them there while you get your spa treatments or while you lay on the mats, the heated mats.
And I don't care if these half measures.
They have good Korean food there too. It's a lot of good stuff. You really would enjoy it.
I'm bored. Okay.
So the episode we're talking about today is called Operation Underground. And the big thing that I noticed about this episode right away is that it was written by Marv Wolfman, who is a big-time comic book writer. And it goes with the fact that the story editor for this season is Roger Slifer. So we've got two really, you know, good comic book names kind of in charge of this right now. And honestly, it shows a little bit. Like, these are, again, season two of this show, still better than what they did in the Deke era. And I will say that with no shame whatsoever.
I'm going to say I'm a little bored with these first two episodes. And I was a big proponent of season one. But like I said, I want this to be a dark and I mean, it kind of is a dark, grittier season, but
dark.
It just feels like we haven't seen the chick yet. And, you know, I can't tell the two blonde guys apart here. Like one like tears it up on his skateboard. The other tears it up on his guitar. Why do we need two blonde guys that both tear stuff up? I don't know.
Wait a minute. Wasn't that Metalhead that was on the skateboard?
No, that was Black Dragon on the skateboard.
See, I'm not the only one who can't tell blonde white guys apart.
This but is also, true. Very true.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's all true. He should have black hair. His name is Black Dragon. Come on, guys. Get it together.
This was back in the heyday of white people being ninjas. You got Michael Dudikoffs, your Frank Dukeses, and what have you.
That was actually the era before this. This era of the mid-90s is when you got, what, three ninjas? Where you got, was it Chris Farley as a ninja?
That was called. Beverly Hills Ninja?
Beverly Hills Ninja, yeah. And so this is the second era of white ninjas.
The second wave.
The second epoch of white ninjas.
Yeah. Yep. I can't wait to third wave when we get real big fish.
I don't know why that was really funny to me.
Because you're old.
It's a good
because
one.
It's a reference. It's not a very good reference, and it doesn't really relate perfectly, but because it's old, you're like, I recognize that.
It worked for me. Anyway, so this episode, Operation Underground, I really liked this opening scene. Now, they don't do cold opens live action anymore. That's a thing of the past. We just go straight into intro music.
That's another thing I don't like. I feel like if they're going to cut the budget of this show, I want to see where that money is going. I want big name guest stars. I want explosions. I want lots of backgrounds.
Well, you got lots of explosions in this one.
I don't understand what's going on here because I genuinely enjoyed this episode. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, hey, now we're back on track. And the episodes where I'm like, everything's cool now, you're all like, yeah, but it's not dumb like the end of season one.
No, I want it elevated a little bit. There were things that I liked about this. I like that we get to see Grodd's origin story. You know, I thought that there was some good stuff in here. I'm just saying I want more excitement.
No, I mean, think this is a good, exciting episode. I mean, let me just say, the way it starts out, where they now reestablish what SCAR is, it's no longer an underground terrorist organization. It's now taken on a cult-like status where, you know, they have recruiting drives and people have to prove their loyalty and say, what did you do that makes you worthy of SCAR? And this guy's like, oh, I bombed a candy store. And they're like, well, fuck you. That's random. That doesn't further our goals. You don't even get what we're about, man. Get the fuck out of here to this Sly Simeon guy. And I thought that was like excellent. Like, we're not looking for random violence. We're looking for like motivated, quality candidates for this thing. I appreciated what they were going for and the fact that they like kicked him the F out of their recruitment because he was an idiot. That made me happy.
Yeah, I do appreciate. I appreciate any time that there's like a villain with a message I can get behind, and the message of like, oh, we need to like have law and order, so that they're not just like, oh, we need lots of money, we need to take over government. Like, this new era of Scar seems to think like people aren't running the world right. I can run it better. Thanos was right. And you know, like,
I can run better. I can run anything better than you.
And I appreciate that. It's not chaos. It's the opposite of chaos. They want to order the world. And I like that there's this dude that's so desperate to join it. He has like desperate guy asking a woman out repeatedly on Twitter vibes.
Totally.
He goes there and he's like, I bombed a place. Hey, hey, hey. You look pretty. Hey there. Hi there. How's your day going? Hello?
Send nudes.
But this guy looks like a monkey and someone's like, hey, your last name is Simeon, which is like truly, truly tragic. But this is when I was like, oh, this is like a fucking Batman origin story. This isn't like a G.I. Joe thing. So I'm kind of into the fact that they're like, you know what? Screw it. Let's throw some old school villains and see their origin stories.
I was torn on this because like, yeah, if you look kind of like a monkey and your name is Simeon, of course people are going to say that you're a monkey and you can't go flipping out about it. You change your name.
Yeah.
At the very least, so that at least you're not bringing it on yourself at this point. It's kind of on him.
Wow.
That being said,
wow, blame the victim, Chan. Oh, I agree.
Bombing
a candy store
does
not. Ugly, we wouldn't need to bully him.
Get to be a victim when you bomb candy stores.
I want
to
know, like, did candy get blown sky high, and were people allowed to then take it for free because it was slightly ruined? And where can I get this candy?
No, Gina. What happens when sugar gets very, very hot?
It's delicious. It goes in my mouth either way. So it
becomes like scalding magma and it's horrifying.
No, but I'm sure that there's some stuff that got like blown clear. I'm just saying if there's a random street in New York City where there is candy that's just up for grabs, I would like to know about it.
So random candy that's like melt to the walls across the streets. You're like, you know what? I can take a bit of this. Now, granted, if he should have said a marshmallow factory. If that dude blew up a marshmallow factory, it would have been awesome. And it would have been chaos. And like, he would have achieved his goals and made people happy at the same time. Win, win, win.
Yes.
All right. Maybe he should have legally bought the candy store and then given me some candy for free. I'm no longer on board with terrorism, guys. Once terrorism affects the candy supply, I am not on board.
I will back you on this. I also agree that we should have a safe space. We should have some sort of Geneva Convention for candy.
Yeah.
So G.I. Joe at this point is now taking a tour of this underground bunker where they get their tech from out in the desert.
A three-hour tour.
By some super Irish guy who keeps calling everybody, hey, boyo. And that brought me some weird joy. I love this dude.
I love the introduction of a hot, super buff, redheaded nerd who's got an Irish accent. This is the dude I want to date on G.I. Joe Extreme.
This is your
like,
new
clearly
guy.
Clearly, he just does nothing but like nerdy shit and work out all day. And that's the dude that I want.
Yeah, yeah. This definitely seems targeted towards the Gina demographic.
Yeah. Give me a hot, nerdy dude who's like, look, I just kind of want to be left alone to read my nerdy books, play my nerdy games, and do 8,000 crunches a day.
You know what? Gina, I wish you luck in your journey to find this individual. He may only exist in cartoons, but I hope for the best.
Fuck that. Men just don't want it enough. They just don't. Cartoon men want it more than real men.
Nobody wants to not be cartoon men anymore.
You should probably just buy a body pillow from some importer in Japan.
Body pillows don't have abs.
I guarantee someone makes one with abs.
Isn't it usually just like a big face? Oh no, I guess the ladies are sexy ladies. Yeah, you're right. I should get one. And then I'll stuff it up inside my vagina.
I don't think you understand how pillows work.
Let it go, Jake. It's body pillow town.
Ew.
So they're on this plant, and apparently they're monitoring the world, which makes me a little bit nervous. This is pre 9/11, and these people are already using Big Brother technology to monitor every major city of the world. I mean, to keep us safe, obviously.
Sure, sure.
And Clancy, I love Clancy here, because Clancy, who we know is Ironclaw, right? And Clancy's just like,
Hold on. Gina, yes. do you know that it's Ironclaw? Do you realize that he is wearing a mask?
He makes a real fast change in this episode. That's way too fast for it to be, because Ironclaw also has a mask on. So what's going on? He's wearing a mask over another mask. It's the logistics of this 90s cartoon are not proper.
Okay. Gina's in Crazy Town, so we can just leave her there. At least we know where she is.
I mean, was there ever a doubt after the last 10 minutes of conversation?
You never can tell, because sometimes she'll like wander back into reality, and you got to be prepared for that, because the things can turn dark real fast.
Now, I'm just saying, if I'm having no problem following it and Gina is having trouble following it, that is a sure sign to see
a
doctor.
How am I having troubles following it? He makes a quick change here. You cannot deny. Oh boy. When he's on the laptop talking to his secret people.
This changes obsessively, obnoxiously quick, yes.
I've made quicker changes in a sketch comedy show.
Yeah, it's like a fraction of a second. He's on a Zoom call. And then the Joes are like, yo, man, we're coming in. And he's like, okay. And his like voice changes midway. And he like he's like all of a sudden changed.
I'm wondering if that Iron Claw outfit is like those Halloween costumes from like the 80s that we all had that were just one piece of like vinyl or plastic and then just mask. It's and like I'm wondering if that's all it is. Yeah, they're just like tearaway NBA player pants, you know?
Oh my
and
God.
Then he's just got Clancy on underneath it. That's how he could do it.
I would love to see just that moment as he just rips it off.
Whew, done. No, but I appreciate Clancy, because this is before that. Clancy turns to the G.I. Joe team and he's like, no need to go after Scar anymore. They're dead. And it's so transparent and so wonderful that all he's just like this one note being like, time to leave Scar alone. Let's disband everybody. And I'm just dying because like I know the truth. And then the one leader, I think it was Stone, who's just like, why do I need to explain this to you, Clancy? Iron Claw is dead. Scar is still very much around. And also, what the F is wrong with you right now?
Yeah, I gotta say, he's not being like chill about it at all. Like if I had just sort of like faked my death and like my organization was on the surface in a shambles, but I was really like running it through a puppet shadow government type thing. If someone was like, hey, what if it's these guys? I wouldn't be like, no, it's not. It's not at all. Why would you say that? I would be like, yeah, it could be. Let's get some lunch, yo. Let's go. I heard there's free candy in New York. That'd be real chill.
Yeah. But I appreciate this show for already planting that seed of doubt in our heroes' minds and just giving them that first little point of just like, ooh, okay, because we are sure they're going to figure it out. So this is just phase one of that plan. And I think that's just kind of cool that they're planting those seeds already. Now this takes us
I understand that they don't, like the audience isn't going to pick up on this, but I think that an important thing in, you know, being undercover as a guy in the military industrial complex is that just because an enemy is gone doesn't mean you shut down your operations. It just means that you have to find new enemies, because then otherwise the funding dries up, you're out of a job, and you won't get that sweet lobbying gig after you retire. So like what should be happening is he should just be like making him do random shit. just like, hey, you know what? I hear those juggalos are, you know, militarizing. Why don't we go investigate them? Go undercover as juggalos for 6 months.
Oh, God, can we do that?
I mean, would that not be an amazing sidebar episode arc?
Look, I thought you meant just for this show, and I just mean the three of us goes undercover at the gathering of the juggalos while wearing body cameras and just sees what happens.
Ray, you Ray? Don't have to go undercover. You would fit in with that crowd.
Ray,
as is.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows, Gina.
How many albums of the Insane Clown Posse have you purchased in your lifetime?
Oh, okay. Well, let's go all the way back then, because we gotta say there is it starts with the six Joker's card albums. So of course you start with Carnival of Carnage, Ringmaster, Riddlebox. Let's see, you've got the Amazing Jekyll Brothers, you've got the Wraith, and I'm forgetting what the fourth one is off the top of my head, but I bought all six Joker's card albums. But then there's also the Christmas album. You can't forget about that. And then there was Forgotten Freshness. And then there was the album on cassette tape, the green one. I forget its name, but that predates the original Joker's card album. So that's nine right there. And I think that's as many as I have purchased, but also two DVDs of Juggalo Championship Wrestling, two of the greatest wrestling DVDs you've ever seen. Chan, if I have not shown these to you, what is my problem? We must watch them.
I am busy that day.
Don't even act like you don't want to see him. You can't. I don't. You being you, there is a 0% chance I did not just pique your curiosity. I know too much.
God damn it.
Patreon exclusive. Patreon exclusive with the crew from AE Doubleback. Crossover. Patreon exclusive. We watch Juggalo Championship Wrestling 1 and 2. The greatest matches, the greatest commentary, the greatest DVDs ever made. So to answer your question, I don't know. I barely even know who the Insane Clown Posse are.
Yeah, no. I get that. I picked up on that immediately.
Like, I'm just mad at myself for forgetting what that fourth Joker's card album is. Somebody
it's the Great Malenko, you dummy. Great who doesn't Malenko? Know that?
Fuck, I was looking right at the album cover and I couldn't place it. Thank you. Great Malenko. Oh, I'm so mad at myself right now.
I mean, here's the thing. The number of Insane Clown Posse albums that I have personally purchased is greater than zero. So I don't have any room to talk, but.
And how many concerts have you been to? Because that's the next step.
Okay, that I can feel comfortable saying zero.
I've been to like three or four.
In Egyptian mythology, I hear that when you die, your heart is weighed against the weight of how many Juggalo tickets and albums you've bought.
Yeah. And that's how I know I'm
the
good.
The Juggalo albums weigh more, you get sent to the bad place.
Oh, no. But I'm just saying, like, if we went undercover at Gathering of the Juggalos, that would be really cool. Totally ironically, though, right?
Yes, Ray. Totally ironically.
So Iron Claw has a meeting of the council, and I don't know if we've ever like established with the council before. I think it's like leaders of other nations, supporters of Scar. Iron Claw is like, yo, I'm still alive. So
I feel like we've seen that a couple of times.
Maybe yeah, in I thought season we did one, too. It feels familiar. But he's apparently opened up the circle of people who know he's alive beyond that one silver, what's her name?
Steel Raven?
Steel Raven, thank you. And so he's now opening it up to the council. And his plan is legitimately good. He goes, we need to just let other people do terrorism. They suck at it. So G.I. Joe can do a thing. But if we just cease all SCAR activities, recruiting every mission, put it on ice for 30 days, G.I. Joe will not have somebody to fight. And then they will disband and we can come back and it'll be too late for them to come back together. Also, I'm going to stop the bombings that are happening in New York City right now because they're leading it. And the way he's going to stop the bombings, send G.I. Joe to stop those bombings of the Simeon guy. And I'm just like, this is really strong. This is really good.
It's also the second time in two episodes that his ends have like the means. Wait a minute. The ends just. Yeah. The means have led to good outcomes.
Yes.
Like he's doing a thing that actually makes people safer. in his quest to destroy G.I. Joe.
But also he's furthering his own cause at the same time. That's the duality of man.
I guess, but like if at the end of the day he keeps doing these things and he still can't beat G.I. Joe, whose side is he on really, man?
It's a good point.
That's good. That's really good. I'm a fan of that. So the part of the episode that really I had trouble working with, unless this is planning to extend out over further episodes, is Heavy Metal, the blonde surfer dude, has an undercover operation in New York City with a rock band where he's going to be the new guitarist in this famous rock band who only play tiny cabarets. So I don't really understand how this works. But they sent him to New York City with this cover of being in this rock band so he can find the bomber of New York City, except for the fact that after he meets the rock band, he never interacts with them ever again.
This feels like something that was like an A story that somehow got turned into a C story.
Yes, exactly.
And then they just sort of let it lie, which is weird.
And then Black Dragon and Quickstrike are sitting around the table and they're just like, well, I don't like that he gets to go undercover. We want to help stop the New York City bomber too. And Stone, to his credit, he just turns to him. He's like, you're goddamn right. You go too. No cover necessary. Just show up.
What the fuck?
Like, what is happening right now?
I thought at some point that the band was like going to come in and save the day or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what would happen if this was a movie that was thought out and shit. Like, it would just be
okay, now hold on. If this were a professional wrestling angle and the story was that Metalhead was going to go join a band, what were they called? Like, Little Birds or some weird shit?
They were called, I wrote it down here. They were called Bird Call.
The little marquee, the little marquee in their place said Bird Call Rock Band.
Bird Call Rock Band at the cabaret.
He was like, okay, Vince McMahon's like, okay, you're going to be like you're going to get to do like awesome rock star guitar solos and stuff like that in this new angle you're doing. And then Black Dragon was like, well, how come he gets to do cool stuff?
Yeah,
I got to get over too. Like, all right, you want a skateboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
No
sure.
That whatsoever.
Like, what is it? Where is that? Why is that there? Like, no idea.
So they show up. They show up. They're just in New York City. They're like at Central Park or something. And I mean, literally, this does not further anything. Black Dragon, who's now out of his like uniform, he's just dressed like a dude. He just walks up to some kid and he's like, "Can I borrow your skateboard?" He's like, "I guess." And then he just does like mad tricks for like a minute straight, including riding up a wall. And then he's like, here's your skateboard, kid. And they're like, whoa. And I'm like, and then we just move on. Meant nothing to anything whatsoever.
I mean, it did inspire the classic 30 Rock meme of Steve Buscemi walking in with a skateboard over his back. Like, hello, fellow youths.
Hello, fellow kids. And then there's a huge explosion and a message appears. Seems to be some sort of weird coded message.
Hold on. Simeon. You forgot the part where they saw a marquee for Martial Arts Monsters 2, The Heretic.
How could I have passed right past that?
Another thing that was dropped and left for no effing reason.
Martial Arts Monsters 2.
The Heretic.
I'm all about world building, but I like it when it like ties into something.
That's a big word for a kid's show. Like, Heretic is like kind of a loaded word for a kid's show.
It separates the kids who have played Warhammer 40,000 from the kids who haven't. That's all.
or listen to Slipknot's album Iowa.
Yep, fair. Or for that matter, what is it? The Nine Inch Nails album. Oh my gosh, the Cutting Edge. What the hell is that album called?
The Downward Spiral.
The Downward Spiral. I'm looking at the album cover. I'm having trouble pulling names of albums today. This is look, music is not my number one reference point, and I am showing my whole ass on this episode right now.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages. Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But here's the Cobra Mamba.
Cobra Mamba, its power is bright and out of the blue. It strikes like lightning.
The Cobra Mamba is a fast attack copter with laser guns and missiles.
Scissor for squitter.
The Mamba's sides detach to become attack pods.
Triple threat, meanest yet, Cobra Mamba.
Go, Joe!
Nobody beats G.I. Joe, the real American hero.
Cobra Mamba and other vehicles and figures sold separately.
Go, Joe!
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, so now there's an explosion. Everybody's running away. There's a message. And Metalhead, now it just goes, oh, well, that happened. Metalhead goes into his audition with the band. And I kind of like that the band is like, we don't know you. Our manager says you're a new guitarist, but we've never heard of you. You've got a lot to prove. We will still fire you. We don't give a shit what our manager says. I'm like, cool. So he ends up playing, and I love the fact that all the members of the band have G.I. Joe code names. I didn't write them all down, but it was like, I'm Bird, I'm Gravel.
Band names, Ray. Everyone with cool nicknames is a member of a elite military operation.
How
the
dare
other
you?
Guitarist, his name was Strings.
Strings.
Oh, it's like the Burger King Kids Club.
Oh my God. Again, like this is
I'm the drummer. My name is Backbeat.
It's a weird call to begin with, just to have those names, but then to not have it lead anywhere or mean
nowhere.
Anything. Like, why did you spend the extra 8 seconds it took to give us that information when it is absolutely useless?
I'm going
to
write a sketch. It. No one steal this. Copyright Gina Impolito. This counts as a legal binding agreement of the one guy in like the 80s and 90s whose job it was to come up with nicknames for anyone, like for the Burger King Kids Club kids and for anyone in a cartoon. And he's just the guru and they keep going to him and they're like, all right, we've got a kid in a wheelchair for the Burger King Kids Club. There's only one guy who can name this character something unique and compelling. And then they go to him and he's just smoking a cigarette in a dimly lit room. And he goes, did you bring the money? And they just have an envelope of cash that they like leave on his floor. And he goes, name the kid Wheels. And they leave the cash and go.
And poof, just disappears in a puff of smoke. That much genius cannot be contained in this universe for too long.
No, that's clearly an alien hand guiding us. That's all I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So, Metalhead apparently can shred on the guitar. We knew this from the previous season where he played guitar, some sort of guitar weapon,
if I
remember
right. Isn't that like his thing in like the opening or some shit?
Yes. And yeah.
Ray's acted like, oh, there we knew this from one very specific thing. Like his whole thing is that this.
I don't know, you can live the life but not have the talent. I mean, that is possible, but we've seen the talent before.
Yeah, it's a they got to bring it up every once in a while. Just so you know, he's like a fully fleshed out three-dimensional kind of character.
Really,
and not
is
just the computer guy.
yeah. He's not just some surfer guy who loves computers. He has angles to him. And so they say, "Oh, you're in. We love you. You're in. Great." And then we drop that angle entirely for act two. Like it's
like, oops, gotta go.
It's gone. Wild to me. Because the other two members of G.I. Joe sort of like, rush him out the door being like, we got to find this guy from this bomb. And he's like, okay, bye. Nothing. We never see these people again. So I'm hoping that in episode 3, there's some sort of like future use of this angle, because why?
You know where they are? They're on tour with, what was her name in like one of the very first Sunbow episodes?
Yeah. At first when they said that it was you're going undercover in a rock band, I was like, oh my God, are they redoing that episode? Are we going to get like a wolf coming in to, you know, dress up as the tambourine player?
About, you're talking about a Satin and Satin, her cabaret show.
Yeah, they're opening for Satin. The encore group is Cold Slither.
Guys, I really want to go just watch Pyramid of Darkness again, just because you said that. It's so wonderful. I
mean, we're going to eventually have to circle back around to rewatching all of these.
I mean, and the part that's crazy is you're not wrong. We completely are going to bookend all of this with one more run of Sunbow Era.
No, absolutely.
Over two more seasons, probably three or four years. That'll be about 19 years into this podcast.
Is this what it feels like to be you, Gina? Just knowing that it's never going to end. I do want to say that, like, I want to say that it's just not like this guy is like Marv Wolfman is, you know, just like a comics legend. He's been working forever and has created some of the greatest characters in comic book history. Like, maybe he's just not real well versed with writing animation, and so wrote, you know, a 60 page script when, you know, they had to cram it down to 30. And so like a bunch of stuff got left out, and, you know, like it was this whole just really filled in world that was really interesting and exciting. But I'm looking at his goddamn filmography, and dude has been writing since 80s. He's been writing cartoons since 86. Mm-hmm. He has, he was a head writer in season 3 of Transformers. So like he was a head writer like years before this ever came out, and he has been writing consistently you know, for like 20 years in animation. So it's not like he screwed this up.
No.
For some reason, there's just so much stuff missing from this.
And for the people, when we say Marv Wolfman is a comic book legend, I just have a list here. These are the characters that he has created. Co-created. Yeah, but he's, you know, one of the mind behind it, the writer side of the creation process behind Blade, Cyborg, Raven, Starfire, Deathstroke, Tim Drake, Robin, somebody named Rose Wilson I'm not familiar with, but Nova, Black Cat, Bullseye, and the Omega Men, who I don't know them either, but like that's a lot of known characters from this guy. I mean, it seems like he may have created the Teen Titans.
Yes, because you listed off all of the Teen Titans.
Oh, is that who they are?
Cyborg, Raven, Starfire.
He created the Teen Titans. Well, to be fair, didn't those characters exist before the Teen Titans existed? Weren't they pulled together to do that?
I don't think so. I think the new Teen Titans, those were all new.
I mean, here's the deal. My point is, if you don't know, now you know. Marv Wolfman is about as legit a comic book author as you're going to find on the planet, writing G.I. Joe Extreme Season 2. Kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what I need a sound poll for this one, Chan, because one of my favorite moments maybe in G.I. Joe history happened in this episode, because he gives them a riddle of what comes after 5. And I need this because this spoke to me in a way I can't fully wrap my head around.
Yeah.
What follows 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? This could be anything, man.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Thank you. Thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What comes after 5? It could be literally anything. I respect a fellow non-math knower. So they figure out very, very quickly that he's talking about subway train platforms, and that what comes after 5 is subway train number 6. They go down into the subway and they get his voice over the PA system, and they're like, ooh, we got to just go to the ticket booth. That's where the PA system is, to find out that 1, there's a clerk tied up. 2, it was a recording on a tape recorder, I think. And three, there was a bomb in there and it goes off. Boom. Another explosion for Gina Ippolito, who said there weren't enough explosions in the episode featuring 9,000 explosions.
Nonstop.
It was constantly, the screen was constantly exploding. I don't know what Gina was talking about.
I'm just saying.
Well, they decide they need to check the trains. Unless you guys got more to talk about the ticket booth. There really wasn't much there. No. Okay. So we're going to check the trains now. We're going to check the trains on the number 6 platform. And so they go 1, 2, 3. Each one takes a train. Quick Strike goes after the one that just left. Metalhead is going to get on the last one. And then Black Dragon's getting on the one that's arriving right now. So they're like, it's got to be one of these. Let's do it. Quick Strike realizes he's not going to be able to get to he's not going to be able to catch up to the subway. So he runs out of the subway, grappling hooks a helicopter, shouts from a distance, I'm in G.I. Joe. Take
Hold
me
on.
To this station.
Hold on.
Stop. Yes.
I'm in G.I. Joe. Take me to Big Street Subway.
What the? Who? In what? You just grappling hook a helicopter and say, take me to the 6th Street subway.
That's right. When they do the inevitable G.I. Joe Grand Theft Auto video game crossover, you're just going to be able to grappling hook any vehicle, shout at them, I'm in G.I. Joe, and they will take you wherever you need to go.
There's apparently some level of celebrity. People know who the G.I. Joes are and like they want to help them any way they can. What level of celebrity do you have to be to have someone grappling hook your helicopter, scream, take me to the 6th Street subway, and you go, okay.
Immediately.
We're a helicopter flying through skyscrapers in the middle of fucking New York. Let's just take him to the 6th Street subway.
Look, that dude was bored. And like, if you're bored and just sort of flying around and being like, oh, what's that? Is there an accident? What are we trying to spot here? Is that there's a bird? And if some dude fucking grappling hooked you, you'd be like, all right, awesome. At least something's going on. I'm going to ride this adventure out.
I feel like the least bored person in the world is someone flying a helicopter through skyscraper in the middle of fucking New York City.
Yeah, between buildings that are very close together, it was a little frightening.
Well, you know.
I'm just saying.
You know, it's not my life. But it was kind of fun. So he takes him over there and they do it. And then Black Dragon's like, I checked my train and there's the other train somehow going in the opposite direction now that Metalhead's on. I'm just going to jump from one train to another because I'm sure I've checked everywhere. And I was like, that's kind of wild. No, you didn't. Because later on, they establish they need to actually like make a bomb detector to actually find the bomb. So I think Black Dragon's work on this is very suspect.
Black Dragon,
I do not care for that.
Black Dragon was on a train. It left the station. Metalhead gets on a train 10 minutes later.
That's right.
Follows after him on the same track. After a few minutes, Black Dragon's like, ain't nothing here. I'm going to peek out the window. Oh, look at that. There's Metalhead's train going the opposite direction.
That's not how
somehow it had passed him and turned around and went back the other direction, even though it started 10 minutes later, at which point he jumps across two speeding trains going in opposite directions. And he's like, whoop, just hop right across. And yet they're afraid to leap off it. Later on in the episode when it's just one train just going.
But not just that. If you look at the pathing, Quick Strike didn't need to do the helicopter thing. He could have just gotten on the one, right? And then tried to jump on the other one, right? Is that how it could have worked?
I mean, that's how trains work, apparently.
That's how they work in this world. Don't worry about that. And then the part that kind of really upset me in this is the main character's, the main villain's name in this is Sly Simeon. And they say, oh, he looks just like a monkey. I don't think he looked that much like a monkey. I think people are being very mean to him.
No.
You think he looked like a monkey, Gina?
I thought he didn't. At some point, he himself like calls him a monkey or he like in his manifesto or something. He calls himself because that's when they know when they see him on the train, they're like, hey, the guy called himself a monkey and that guy looks like a monkey.
No, he said, well, you won't make a monkey out of me.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. But said. I mean, come on. Who's like, what's that? He clearly knows what he's doing.
I had a little bit of trouble with this part.
Get it? My last name's Simeon, and everyone calls me a monkey.
So are you on the same page with me that this is all his own fault? Are you victim blaming like someone who's a real big fan of Kanye obviously would?
Wow.
Wait, you're saying it's not all his fault? It's not this monkey man's fault?
No, I'm saying that you're now agreeing with me, and Ray is the one who's out on this one for some reason.
Wow.
Yeah, because Ray feels bad for him.
I do feel bad for him because, you know,
you're like, oh, don't make a monkey out of me.
They say, don't make a monkey out of me. From that, they're just like, he must have simian features. And so they see this poor dude wearing a hat and a trench coat just on the subway, and they just shout, that guy looks like a monkey. Let's get him.
Right. To be fair. I understand that it's very upsetting to you to find out that sometimes white men can also be made fun of and have a bad time at life. I understand that might be shattering your whole world right now.
It's upsetting.
And that you're immediately feeling bad for this one terrorist who blew up a candy shop.
it was less a matter of them. They should have been looking for a guy who looks like a monkey and, you know, profiling that way. It's getting perilously close to some racist tropes that I don't even want to get into. But All of the people on the train are skinny ass people. The G.I. Joes are these hulking monsters with shoulders that are like 8 feet across. There's one other dude on that train out of the hundreds of people on the train that also has 8 foot broad shoulders. Like, maybe we should look at him because he does have a trench coat and a hat and he's walking around all.
I mean, that's fair. Like. But, I didn't even mention my favorite part is when Black Dragon comes on the train, he comes in by smashing through a window, and everybody is terrified. He's like, I'm in G.I. Joe, it's fine. And then everybody's like, all right. And I'm like, what is happening in this episode? They're getting weirder and weirder as it's going. And I did love this episode. There's a lot I liked about it. But, Gina, come on. White people, you shouldn't be able to make fun of them, man.
I mean, it's certainly not without them being allowed to retaliate in multiple murder type ways.
and another sound pull that I want here. We cut over to, they find him. And I like this because they catch him. They're like, hey, monkey. And runs. They catch up to him and they're like, we got you. Where's the bomb? He goes, you guys are really bad at this. Why would I be on the train that actually has the bomb? And since we think Black Dragon is completely beyond reproach when it comes to his searching skills in those 90 seconds he was on that train, we now have, through process of elimination, figured out the bomb is on the train where Quickstrike is. And so we cut over to Quickstrike, who doesn't know this. He opens, there's a door that won't open, and there's this guy on the subway just by the door. And the guy has a lot to say for a character that has no importance whatsoever. I would like to hear his entire speech and back and forth with Quickstrike, because this is a random dude that takes up far more of my life in this episode than I think that I ever imagined he would.
Yeah, this guy is very clearly one of those people that like is a Trump supporter and just thinks everyone else is a Trump supporter. This guy starts out by being like, yeah, city's going to shit. Am I right? You clearly agree with me. Yeah. Make the city great again.
That guy would later become Trump's campaign manager, I'm pretty sure.
There's another thing that like this one actually makes sense, that it would just be like a little piece of the world that just sort of like fills it out, makes it feel more lived in, that you can just go by. It's just like one rando on the street, not like like a whole plot line that gets dropped. So yeah.
I love it. Give me world building. Give me, you know, you could have a guy in the background just say, you know, he went over there. But if you could give him two more lines that help add to the flavor of everything and make him memorable, you make me happy by doing so. Like, I love, this is a lesson in background characters How many people that got introduced for just one scene in this episode were completely memorable and they barely did anything, but they did enough to catch the imagination. That made me very happy.
There you go. That's how you write an animated script, Gina.
Hang on, let me get my notebook.
Learn from Marv Wolfman, who quite honestly knows what he's doing.
I mean, to be fair, Marv Wolfman's pretty good at it.
Yeah, he's pretty strong. Okay, so he ends up opening. He says, you know, you can open these doors. You just got to know how to do it. And he like tears the door off or something. It was great. He immediately finds a bomb that explodes and he's fine. The bomb explodes an inch from his face. It blows out the entire side of the train car. It is gone. There is no more walls or ceiling of this train car. He was right next to it completely, not even singed.
There's also, again, no explanation. Much like there was no explanation when dude like got blown up at the end of season one and then was just like fine and somehow had masks made. I'm just saying they're really cutting some corners here.
Well, this is the part of the episode that really kind of made me go, what? Because that bomb happens. It blows up. It takes out an entire piece of train car. And then immediately he touches base with the other two Joes. And they're like, okay, you now have to find the bomb on the train. It's like, but he just found a bomb. And he couldn't stop it. Isn't that logically the bomb that's on the train? No, apparently
that's
not.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I'm like, my notes here. How is he possibly fine? Followed by the controls are now sabotaged, so he can't stop the train in any way. Followed by, wait, there's another bomb? 5 minutes. They make it very clear. 5 minutes is how much time they have to have this bomb. And I would argue, look, I'm no time wizard, but I think longer than 5 minutes goes by with the amount of things they find to do. Because not only, okay, they figure out it's going to the Inter-Alliance building. So that's where we're all headed to. That's the enemies of Scar or whatever. This is great. That's all the countries working together. Or maybe that's the building of Scar. I don't remember. Anyway, through all of this, we have 5 minutes. So in those 5 minutes, Black Dragon and Metalhead get on that train from wherever it is they are. They find their way onto that train. Metalhead says, I need to take these scrap pieces I find around this subway car as it's moving and build a bomb detector and improvise one. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
What? He improvises a bomb sweeper. They use the grappling hook to cross over to the other train. That's how they get over there. There's a grappling hook and they crawl across it. At which point they use the bomb detector that he hobbles together to find the bomb. Which now has 1 minute to go. They did all that in 4 minutes time, or roughly as long as Leatherneck can hold his breath in outer space. That is, you're stretching credulity just slightly with the whole, I need to find spare parts, assemble this device that works in roughly 2.5 minutes time allotted.
Look, a smart guy could do it.
What?
That's what I'm saying. That's why you're confused.
Okay, fair. Fair.
Is this more or less unbelievable than Quickstrike tearing the connectors between the trains apart with his bare hands?
Oh, let's get it there. Yeah.
Like maybe 6 inches of solid steel.
Okay, it was a lot. I see the problem here. C-Chan, a strong guy could do it. You don't get it because a strong guy's doing it. Ray doesn't get it because a smart guy's doing it.
I should be doing more questions, is what you're saying.
I perfectly understood everything that was happening.
To be fair, the fact that Quickstrike can just reach down with his hands and rip off this train connector does also explain why that bomb didn't hurt him at all.
I mean, 8 foot shoulders. That's, yeah.
It's a big guy. So then they decide, oh, what if we move? What if we switch tracks? Well, how do we do it? We can't get to the control panel. Okay, we'll do it the old fashioned way. We gotta knock that train switch that's down the tracks, and we gotta knock it so it manually changes the train tracks. Okay.
Do
This is like how they do it Jamaica. Still back in Jamaica.
So
they shoot grappling hooks at levers that are just down there on the ground while the train is going full speed.
Yeah. He takes his grappling hook. The MVP of this episode, quite frankly, is the grappling hook. He shoots it. It goes beyond. He's on a speeding train. He shoots it in front of where the train is going. It knocks the sign that's about 30 yards away, knocks it in perfect accuracy, moves the tracks. The tracks go into an abandoned train yard, at which point they're just like, oh, we gotta get off. In my mind, Quick Strike should just be like, fucking why? I'll be fine. But they use the grappling hook, I believe, again to escape.
Yes, there's 15 seconds left. They do that thing. He shoots a thing, and it turns a thing, and they go. And 5 seconds later, they've run to the back of the train, and the grappling hook has already been reeled back in to shoot off again so that they can get off the train with no damage. Because they says 10 seconds at that point.
And honestly, that explosion was pretty weak for something that was going to destroy a gigantic skyscraper like the Inter-Alliance building, right? Am I crazy?
Yeah.
Not a big explosion. This guy does not know. His simian does not know what he's doing.
He's a monkey. What do you want? Monkeys can't do explosives. Jesus Christ, man.
They can do whatever they want. Thumbs,
all of a sudden they have a chemistry degree.
They can do whatever they want. They can be whatever they want.
Thank you, Gina. I will not have this anti-monkey slander. Also, is simian on that train
with the apes, Jan, when you underestimate them.
You know, it just occurred to me, Simeon, I believe, gets arrested. They show it.
Yes.
But they left Simeon behind on that other train. Like, wouldn't he just walk away safely?
Is that the least believable thing that happened this episode?
You know what? That's the one that's going to tear the fabric of space and time for me here. I was fine with the 4 minutes to hobble together a bomb detecting device and get across from one train to another. But you know what? This whole simian angle, because they didn't show him crossing to the new train. What the H, people? I need better continuity, Marv. I'm just kidding. You're fantastic. Ending with a Scar pamphlet, because Clancy's still insisting, well, Scar's gone. They're like, we have the pamphlet of their recruitment from today. And he even comes out and says they are a cult, which is exactly what they felt like at the beginning. And then inexplicably, like a Mission Impossible mission statement, it just self-destructs and burns for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I kind of like the fact that they built a built-in, like a self-destruct button in there.
When is that thing timed to go off?
I don't know. It did seem like very careless, though, that they're just leaving it around places. So I like to think that they're all supposed to self-destruct. That one was maybe just a little glitchy. And then once it was handled and set down, then it like fixed itself.
It was in Monkey Man's pocket the entire time as he's running around this place, setting bombs, getting the shit kicked out of him by Joes. At what point is it supposed to self-destruct again?
Maybe once it's away from body heat. Maybe it's like really high tech, because you obviously don't want it to self-destruct while you have it on you. So the second it's like it reaches fresh air, it's a combination of fresh air and lower than normal body temperature.
But it was in the abandoned train yard, which Simeon never was there. He was in the other train to safely walk away. How did it blow?
No. It was
something out of a Disney film.
It was in his back pocket, and then they took it away from him.
But he wasn't there. He was on the other train.
They were there when they were putting him into the truck to go away to jail for life.
This doesn't make sense to me. This episode is starting to lose me.
Nothing ever makes sense to you.
Says the person who still doesn't understand why he has a mask.
I'm just saying I understand why he has a mask. I'm just saying they have the timing off for how long it takes one. As someone who has worn many an alien mask in many a sketch shows.
Go on.
Not where I thought you were going.
It doesn't take a breath's length to put on a very complicated mask.
Is the mask complicated, though? It seems like it's like a one-piecer with maybe even like a nothing in the back. You just
but
sort of
when
slide
he's
it on.
Sitting on his Zoom, he's wearing sure. his Scar getup, if you will.
True. The mm-hmm. whole outfit with the yes. pauldrons and everything.
He's wearing the Scar face, the Scar cape, whatever he's got going on. Mm-hmm. And it's literally, they don't knock. It's literally just the Joes go, "We're coming in." Walk and in. Then they're in. And in less than a second, he has changed out of that and yes. is now wearing his Clancy disguise. I'm just saying that's not how quick changes work.
I don't know if you've ever been a 12-year-old boy trying to jerk off and you hear somebody coming down the hall, but I can assure you that the quick changes of that speed are possible if you're really, really
no,
interested
you're talking
in
making about, that. There's some lead-up time because you hear the footsteps. These guys are literally like walking into the room as they say, "We're coming in."
I mean, you think he's not going to be ready for that?
What I just appreciate,
like
what I just figured out.
When I used to watch the Spice Channel, but the previous yeah. channel was something.
You hit that jump button.
Totally innocuous.
You hit that jump button,
and
go
you
right
just
back.
Perch with your finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
It just occurred to me that Iron Claw was in a Zoom meeting, sitting behind a desk, and still took the time to wear the Iron Claw pants. There was no reason for him to be. He could have had the Clancy pants on. I wouldn't have thought any less of him. Nobody can see you there.
Clancy pants? That would have been a better name for that band than Bird Call.
Oh, man. Clancy Pants. Led by Clancy Brown.
Oh, my God. Actor. Oh, now my see, God. I would pay so much money to see that show.
I would give Ticketmaster all the money to sit yep. lower bowl. That's a fact. Yep. And that's the episode of G.I. Joe Extreme. I'll be honest, the little act three issues aside, I found this episode to be very enjoyable. I loved the tangents. I loved the weird characterizations of people we never see again. And the part that we have an extended scene where they go to New York, establish their undercover, do the entire audition for the rock band, and then immediately ditch that plot point entirely and never come back to it. For some reason, it brings me joy. It was so ridiculous. I'm here for it.
I do hate that. That is my one knock on this episode, I think. Oh, I guess everything is a knock for you, Gina.
No, I enjoyed it. I just thought these last two episodes, after such a big build-up in last season, I thought the energy felt a little off. It's like every improviser says after every show they do with their group that they've been together with for 10 years, they say, "I felt like we were a little low energy out there, guys." Doesn't mean it was a bad show.
So you're saying they should be doing zip, zap, zop before they go on every mission?
Yeah, exactly. Ask Simeon to get in there with them. He, you know.
"Hey guys, I need a suggestion from the audience. Dildo, let's do it."
That guy steamrolls every episode.
Ugh. I don't think I could handle being on an improv team with Metalhead. I just don't.
I couldn't don't handle think I it because I wouldn't it. Be able to tell all those white guys apart.
Yeah. That is wow. The G.I. Joe team, in many ways, is surprisingly like an improv team. Surprising and uncomfortable.
So I'm sitting right here. So you've got the blonde guy who's a surfer dude. You've got the white dude with the Asian fetish. You've got the black dude from Jamaica who won't take his sunglasses off. I'll be honest. I feel like I've seen that team like 500 times at 500 different theaters.
I think you're right.
And their name was Clancy Pants. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
That was what... Oh, Jesus Christ. Just do the outro and get us out of here.
What are you talking about? Gina doesn't have writing to do for work. Oh, crap. She told us before we recorded that's exactly what she has to do. So let's talk about the Insane Clown Posse for a little bit more. Today's episode, Operation Underground, episode 2 of season 2 of G.I. Joe Extreme. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast. There are ways that you can reach out to us. You can hit us up facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Of course, our Patreon, patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. We just recently did a live show with the fans, and I think we should try to do another one. I thought it was very successful. I thought we had a lot of fun with it. And if Gina would stop taking lunch meetings every day with all these highfalutin rodeo drive types, we will do it again.
You do know that that's not how you pronounce rodeo drive, right?
Rodeo drive. It's like a rodeo. That's like a lasso and a bull.
The sad thing about Ray is that we can never really be sure he's joking.
Yeah.
It's that dry wit, guys. Team. Y'all. Folks. You can also hit us up on Twitter, of course, at G.I. Joe Podcast. But individually, you can find me at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And you should reach out to all of us and let us know what you thought of G.I. Joe Extreme Episode 2, Operation Underground. Maybe we'll even post a link so you can watch this one. That's a thing we used to do. That probably helps people. Find it yourself, scrubs. No, I'll post a link to this one. So until next week, may your improv teams be salty and your nuts be firm.
God damn.
Situation critical.
Roll call!
Right, Lieutenant Stone.
The odds are a million to one.
And that's the way we like it.
Hey, you. No. Don't look over here. Keep your eyes on the road. Got something for you. Take a listen to this.
In the newest Pokemon, they have Score Bunny, which is a starter.
What?
Yes.
Score Bunny?
So it's a fire bunny that plays soccer. He kicks balls.
He scores. Great.
Score, like Scorch, I think. Yeah. Oh, I get it. Like goal. Like Score Bunny.
Rad.
There's Score Bunny, who uses his mad soccer skills to steal, I think, like donuts or something like that.
How does he use his soccer skills to steal donuts?
He kicks it.
Oh, yummy.
The best part is, though, Score Bunny wants to go and follow Ash and go on big adventures.
But Ash is still the main character of the anime?
Yes, where have you been? Yeah, so Ash is like, I'm getting on the train. I'm leaving, Score Bunny. And Score Bunny's like...
Is it because he's 80 years old? That's why he sounds like that? Nothing makes donuts taste better than a foot coming in contact with them.
If you like what you heard and love co-op with your friends, check out Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.